The Trump administration just sent a long list of hardline immigration demands to Congress. This hour, the immigration outlook for Iowa. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Today, several Iowa perspectives on the Obama-era immigration policy known as DACA, Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, and the possible immigration overhaul that may be on the way. We'll hear from Iowa State University economist Dave Swenson a little later, as well as State Senator Julian Garrett, also immigration attorney Lori Chesser from Des Moines. And we'll start our program with two Iowa DACA recipients, so-called Dreamers. Join our conversation. First, this news.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors, dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Recently, you remember in our news, President Trump stunned Republicans when he reached out with a deal with Democratic leaders to protect DACA recipients. These are recipients of the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals bill. They're known as Dreamers, young people illegally brought to the U.S. as children. And that framework for that possible deal would have protected these Dreamers from deportation in exchange for a package of border security measures. But, of course, our politics move very quickly these days. That agreement may be in jeopardy now that the White House has issued a long list of hardline immigration demands, including the building of a controversial border wall, strengthening of enforcement of immigration laws, barring people from bringing extended families to the United States, and basing permanent resident status on immigrants' skills. Now, everyone's asking, are these items absolute requirements or an opening bargaining position by the White House? We don't know. But either way, they would represent a major tightening of immigration laws. Now that the president's immigration wish list of the president lies in Congress's hands, 5 months ago, before DACA recipients began losing their protections, this hour, several Iowa perspectives on the Obama-era immigration policy known as DACA, Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, and the tighter immigration laws the White House has suggested. Later in the program, we'll hear from Iowa State University economist Dave Swenson about the economic impact in Iowa should DACA not be renewed. We'll also hear from a DACA opponent, State Senator Julian Garrett, and we'll hear from DACA recipients, also an immigration lawyer. If you'd like to join our conversation this hour, where do you stand on the debate over DACA, the Dreamers, the young people brought here illegally to the U.S. as children? Perhaps that policy and future immigration policy will affect you or your family. Join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. You can also email us, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Joining us, first of all, is Nylvia Brownson, a DACA recipient born in Mexico. Nylvia, are you there?
Yes.
Nice to have you with us. You live in Waterloo, right?
That's correct.
And you are married with a family.
Yep. I was married in 2015, May of 2015, and we have a daughter together, so yeah.
Mm-hmm. So how long have you been a DACA recipient? When did you apply?
I applied for DACA in 2012, as soon as it came out. Within a week of eligibility, when people could start applying, both my sister and I applied, and we received our DACA officially by, the completion of the process with our Social Security cards and driver's licenses by October 25th of that year.
Mm-hmm. And remind us of the deal, that is, the promise that you made, or that was made to you as someone who applied for DACA.
Right. So basically DACA, as you explained briefly, it's for people that were brought here as youth under the age of 15 that have studied in the U.S., are planning on working in the U.S., haven't been charged of any misdemeanors or felonies, and basically just, you know, children who were brought here, quote unquote, through no fault of their own.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess, I'm sorry, I guess.
No, it allows you to work, right?
Right. We got a work authorization document, employment authorization document, along with a 2-year period deferment of any deportation proceedings.
Mm-hmm.
So whether you were in deportation proceedings or not, they wouldn't act upon that for a full 2 years, and then you just reapply every 2 years.
And you're employed now?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like you and your sister leapt at the opportunity when that was introduced to become a so-called Dreamer in 2012. Recall the feeling you had when that legislation was passed.
It was amazing, to be honest. There was a lot of confusion with it just because we're called Dreamers because of the introduction in 2000 of the DREAM Act, which is just the same. It advocates for people who were brought here as youth that have lived in the U.S. and know only the U.S. as their home. There was a lot of confusion as to whether DACA was the DREAM Act, but it wasn't. We were still excited about the opportunity to finally be able to work in jobs that we were more qualified for rather than we had always been working at jobs that we were overqualified for.
Did you feel like you, in a way, you came out from a certain amount of the shadows a little bit?
For sure. Just the fact that we were able to obtain our driver's licenses, work, apply for mortgage loans. We were both homeowners now at very young ages. It did allow us to come out of the shadows. That was when we finally started opening up to both privately with our friends and then publicly with the media about our status.
Mm-hmm. And your husband is a native-born American?
No, he was adopted. He is a U.S. citizen, but he was adopted.
Mm-hmm. So tell us, Nilvio, what were the circumstances that led you to come to the U.S., and how old were you?
I was 14 months old, so just a little over a year old. My mother brought my sister and I here. My sister was 3, and she brought us here because she was escaping domestic violence that she was experiencing in Mexico. She didn't have any family, you know, any sort of relatives left in Mexico. But because there are so many restrictions with immigration law, none of her family members that were here in the U.S. could petition for her to legally come here. At least not with an extensive 10-year waiting period.
Okay, so let me get your take on the recent months' changes here. DACA put into question by the new administration. There was, as I mentioned there at the start, perhaps a bipartisan, a soft agreement that looks to be in jeopardy now. We have this list from the White House put to Congress of immigration demands before DACA recipients are allowed to stay. What are your thoughts?
Basically, so when DACA came out, a lot of Dreamers are really excited. You know, it was great. It was monumental. But as it allowed us to come out of the shadows, we realized over that period of time from 2012, it's been 5 years, that our parents were being left behind. So the problem with using DACA and Dreamers as a sort of bargaining chip for harsher immigration laws towards everybody else that doesn't qualify for DACA or who aren't considered Dreamers is really unfair, and it's not what we want. Because ultimately, if the country is going to allow us, or the President, Congress, if they're going to allow Dreamers to stay, but they're going to go ahead and deport all our parents, that's not something that we're going to want. So the fact that we're being used as a bargaining tool is just completely unfair. That's not humane at all. I'm 24 years old. I came here when I was 1. So I've been here 23 years. My mother has been here that exact amount of time.
You've been here since you were 1, 23 years. You consider this your homeland.
Right. And it's her home, too. You know, we've been here for 23 years, so I don't understand why I'm considered an American, but she's not.
Mm-hmm. Nilvia, What will you do if DACA is rescinded? We're on a countdown clock, 5 months for Congress to do something. What if?
If DACA is rescinded, I'll have until August of 2018 to continue working. After that point, I mean, I've already pulled out of school. I'm in my senior year of college, and I've already pulled out of school for the semester because since we don't know what that future is, we can't afford to be dumping $800 a month on tuition.
Too much uncertainty.
Right. So it's unclear what I would do exactly.
Okay. What do you have to say, and I don't know if you ever talked to opponents of DACA, those who are in favor of what the president seems to be saying now?
I would just say consider the true impact of what this would look like. A lot of people don't realize that they probably know somebody that is affected in some way or another by immigration. Whether it's somebody that has a family member, a parent, a friend who has a relative that's undocumented, more than likely, a lot of people are affected by this. There's 11 million undocumented people across the country. So chances are you're affected by this. And to just think about the fact that families like mine, like your next door neighbor, could be just torn apart like that. If we're a country that always bases ourselves on family values, why are we okay and condoning ripping apart millions of families?
Okay, Nylvia Brownson, that's all the time we have for you, but thank you very much for giving us your perspective. Nylvia is a DACA recipient, born in Mexico, brought to the United States at the age of one, and has lived here for the past 23 years. Nylvia, thank you for giving your perspective.
Yep, thank you. Have a nice day.
You too. We're getting Iowa perspectives on the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals recipients, DACA recipients, also the future of our immigration law. If you'd like to join us, will future immigration policy affect you or your family? Possibly join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100. River to River at iowapublicradio.org is our email. Joining us now, Iowa State Senator Julian Garrett. He is a Republican from District 13. That's in southwest Iowa, Madison and Warren counties. It includes Indianola. Senator Garrett, welcome to our program.
Thank you for having me.
Before we get into your arguments, I know you have arguments against DACA. What's your reaction to, and I think you were on the line at least sometime, hearing Nylvia's story about what she is asking for? She's been here 23 of 24 years in her life. This is the only country, society that she knows. Are you against DACA, or do you just want to make sure that's in a larger package of immigration overhaul?
Well, there are certainly a lot of particular cases where the stories are very generate a lot of sympathy, and hers is one of them. Of course, I don't know her, but the way she tells her story, it's bound to generate sympathy for her situation. And as far as the future is concerned, this is going to be handled at the federal level, and there are proposals for compromise legislation. I don't know that a bill's been written, but I don't know if there's a chance of getting something like that done or not, but the compromise, as I understand it, would be to permit some or maybe all of the DACA people to stay in return for enhanced border security. And I just don't know at this point if that's possible or not.
I just wanted you to explain your position. You've been against DACA, this move by former President Obama, now affecting approximately 800 individuals. Tell us the basis of your opposition.
Well, keep in mind that we have federal laws on the subject of immigration coming into our country without authorization and with ignoring the laws is a violation of federal law, whether you're a child or an adult, and that has been the law all along. DACA is not a law. DACA was an executive order issued by President Obama in contradiction and in conflict with the existing law. And he himself admitted on many occasions before he issued the order that he didn't have the authority to do it.
Right, because with the backstory there that Congress had failed. I think there was a bill of comprehensive immigration reform that passed the Senate, but not the House. So he felt his view was he needed to act, right?
Well, presidents do not have authority to legislate. And to pass a law, you have to have a bill pass both houses. I mean, everybody knows that. Mm-hmm. The fact that something might pass one chamber or the other doesn't make it a law, and there's no justification in the Constitution or the law for a president or a governor, for that matter, to say, well, this bill passed one house, so we'll just go ahead and act as though both houses had passed it. The president takes an oath to uphold the Constitution and to enforce the laws, and in this case, it appears to me that President Obama didn't do that. He did not enforce the law as it was written by Congress. Instead, he issued his order contradicting the law.
Senator Garrett, looking forward in the couple minutes we have remaining, tell me, what ideally would you like to see in terms of immigration reform? Is there any path for citizenship as advocates of that would call it in the future? Can you see DACA recipients holding on to their protection from deportation? Do you need a border wall? What are your requirements? I know this is being decided at a federal level, but I know you're also a politician in our state.
Well, there are two aspects, I believe, to that question. Number one, if you give amnesty to anybody, people who came as adults or children, that then encourages people in the future to say, well, if we can sneak into the country and stay there for a while, then we're going to get amnesty. So that encourages future violations of the law. So that's a concern. These proposals that are just coming out, I think just in the last few days, for a compromise, I would have to see what the particular bill is to decide whether I would support that or not. I don't have a vote, obviously, at the federal level. My opinion may not matter a whole lot as far as what Congress does, but like to look at the bill and see what they come up with and make a decision then whether the enhanced enforcement is enough to justify a compromise on for the DACA people.
Senator Garrett, do you expect in the next session of the Iowa legislature, and again, this is immigration policy is handled at a federal level. Is there anything, though, that you see legislation coming from the Republicans in control of both the House and the Senate here in Iowa related to immigration this next session?
Well, as a matter of fact, I wrote a bill in this last session last spring, not dealing with DACA, but dealing with the sanctuary cities issue. And we passed the bill in the Senate. All Republicans voted for it. Four Democrats voted with us on it. So it was a bipartisan big majority in the Iowa Senate passed a bill requiring local governments to cooperate with federal immigration authorities. And that bill is now in the House, and we will see what happens there. I'm hopeful that the House will pass it and the governor will sign it. Now, that's a little different issue. We're dealing there with primarily criminals who have been arrested and are in custody at the local level and who are subject to deportation. And the process is the federal immigration authorities, ICE, as they're called, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, notifies the local jurisdiction that this person may be subject to deportation and asks that rather than release the person, that they be turned over to the federal authorities. So I think that makes a lot of sense. There's no reason that we should protect criminals and try to keep them in our communities. Of all people, they seems to me would be the at the top of the list for deportation. So hopefully that bill will pass.
Okay, Senator Julian Garrett, Iowa State Senator, Republican from District 13 in Southwest Iowa. Senator Garrett, thank you for your time and thank you for your views on this.
Thank you for having me on your program.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News coming up on a break, but we wanted to introduce our next guest. Lori Chesser is the chair of the Immigration Department at Davis Brown Law Firm in Des Moines, an immigration lawyer. Hi, Lori.
Hi, Ben. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being on. As I mentioned, we're coming up on a break. We wanted to get you in before this break just to tell us, as an immigration lawyer, you have to be riding some rough seas in the last few months.
Yeah, it's exciting. New things every day, but yeah, that's true.
So what legal rights do DACA recipients currently have?
Well, all DACA did was to say that we're going to defer the deportation of certain people, which is within the bounds of the executive to do that. And so they basically were not subject to deportation unless they, you know, committed a serious crime or something like that. And then also the right to work with a work permit that they had to be have to be issued every 2 years. And then the right to, you know, states like Iowa decided to let people drive and things like that. But basically, it just was a deferral of deportation.
Mm-hmm. So the big what if DACA is rescinded? I don't know if you know roughly how many Iowans are affected. We have 800,000 roughly nationwide in Iowa. That must mean several thousand.
Yeah, the numbers, as far as we can tell, somewhere around 2,800, something like that, DACA recipients in Iowa. And, you know, it really has been rescinded. President Trump did rescind it. The question is, will Congress actually make this some kind of law to
right.
help these same people? So, yeah.
What are you advising DACA recipients? I assume they come to you. What are you advising them at this point?
Well, we're advising everyone to get with a good immigration attorney, not a notario, you know, get with a good immigration attorney and make sure you've explored all your options, because sometimes people do have other options that they may not know about. And then we're also advising, you know, we have no idea what will happen, but making plans to what's going to happen to your property, to your children. You know, you've got U.S. citizen relatives, you've got U.S. property. Make some plans about that in case the worst happens, which you hate to have to advise, but given the uncertainty right now, you know, mm-hmm. this excitement isn't really a good excitement a lot of times. It's actually really horrible for
yeah.
a lot of people. So, yeah.
Preparing for worst-case scenario for nearly 3,000 affected Iowans. Lori Chesser, stay with us, please, of Davis Brown Law Firm in Des Moines. Lori's specialty is immigration. We'll have her for the rest of the program. I hope, Lori, you can stay on, right?
Sure.
Okay, great. And we'll field your calls as well. We have a number of people impacted by the current and future immigration policy. That is in flux, as we're hearing. 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. When we come back, we'll talk with another DACA recipient, this one from El Salvador. We'll hear her story and talk about what she is facing and the thoughts she has. Also, we'll talk with Iowa State University economist Dave Swenson about how this may impact us here in Iowa, our economy. And that's when we return. I'm Ben Kiefer. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors, dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
And we're back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. You'll want to be with us tomorrow, of course, for Politics Wednesday. Wayne Moyer of Grinnell College, Tim Hagel of the University of Iowa will join us. Haven't made up the agenda for tomorrow, but boy, well, lots to talk about. Of course, we'll talk about the Donald Trump-Bob Corker feud, legislative agenda, tax overhaul, immigration, of course, will be on that tomorrow on River to River. Today, we're talking about immigration, DACA, Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, talking with several recipients of that. DACA was rescinded by the Trump administration in September, just last month. Recently, the president stunned Republicans when he reached a deal with Democratic leaders, though, to protect DACA recipients, known as Dreamers. That agreement may be in jeopardy. Now, the White House has issued this past weekend a long list of hardline immigration demands, and so it's in the Congress's hands. 5 months to go before DACA recipients begin losing their protections from deportation. So we're getting several Iowa perspectives on DACA and tighter immigration laws. The White House has suggested. Lori Chesser is with us, immigration attorney at Davis Brown Law Firm in Des Moines. Lori's still there. Hi, Lori. Welcome back.
Hello.
I want to have Dave Swenson of ISU, join us very quickly. Dave is an associate scientist in the Department of Economics. Dave, are you there?
I am here.
Excellent. I know you've got another commitment coming up in a few minutes. We wanted to get the big picture in terms of the economic impact here in Iowa. Should DACA go away? We sort of felt, Lori felt that nearly 3,000 DACA recipients working in Iowa. There are those. What do your numbers tell us?
Well, they're very close to that, and you're correct. We will have an economic impact. If you think in terms of a without situation where those people who are currently participating in the state's economy or going to the state's public schools are made to leave, then by definition, the economy has to contract. So that's number one. So we can work our way through some of these numbers. The Center for American Progress has done an estimate of what they think that DACA recipients in Iowa, the ones that are working, it's about 2,450 is their estimate that are DACA recipients that are in the workforce. And so they've calculated an estimate that those recipients in Iowa contribute about $188 million worth of GDP. Now, GDP is the sum of their labor plus the sum of the profits they generate for their employers or the returns to investment they generate for investors. And you put that all together and you get GDP. So that's a very big chunk of change with regard to the economy. And especially if you think in terms of a without situation, if they're all made to leave their work and by definition our workforce then has to contract and consumption in the state has to contract. Now, I've done another calculation, though, and we can estimate that those DACA workers, given there's been a survey that's been done of several states, and if we assume Iowa's DACA workers, that 2,450, are making something close to the national average in terms of what we call labor income, not just wages and salaries, but total income and benefits, I can run that through a modeling system that I have, and I can say if we remove that consumption from the state's economy, that begins with $95 million worth of their labor income. But when you remove that consumption from the state's economy, you further reduce the state's GDP by almost $56 million, and you cost the state another 781 additional jobs. So if you add our DACA workers that you lift out if you deport them, plus the resulting loss in consumption and economic activity mm-hmm. associated with their spending, their incomes, you come up with about 3,200 jobs get cost in Iowa.
Does that account also for, we heard a DACA recipient earlier in the program, you know, say one person is a DACA recipient in a family and the entire family chooses to leave because, of course, they don't want to be torn apart. It could be bigger than that, isn't it?
Well, it could be bigger than that, especially if the DACA recipient is the primary income earner in that family. And now, excuse me, this was truly based just on their estimated earnings. Mm-hmm. Now, I have another number, though, and I wanted Iowans to think about it this way as well. These are DACA recipients. Many of them came as youngsters into the state of Iowa. As one of your guests, she's been here quite a long time. If we make some just basic assumptions about our 2,800 DACA recipients here in Iowa, and let's say we assume they average 6 years worth of education in Iowa's public school system. What might have been the value of the public support for their education and the development of their human capital? And if we assume that they on average spent 6 years in Iowa's public schools, that amounted to about $101 million of state support for their education. So you can think of it in terms of a public's cost, but you can also think of it in terms of a public's investment. And then if we grab a fraction of those and put them in college based on the national statistics, the incidence of them attending community colleges or public universities, four-year universities, that basically our support for them is another $12 million annually. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot of public money that the state of Iowa has invested in these young people, both in terms of their public education and in terms of the economic activity they stimulate in the state, as well as the tax revenues that they generate, because they a very high fraction, over 87%, are participants in the workforce.
So, Dave, before you go, what I hear you saying is when we take the human part of this equation, and they all are humans, you work with data, of course, but when we look at it purely in terms of economic numbers, investment, employment in Iowa, workforce, does anything come out good here? Are there any positives we get in Iowa from having DACA recipients possibly be deported? We have an Iowa unemployment rate of what, around 3% right now, well below the national average. I mean, that's pretty much the bottom of the scale, isn't it?
We don't
have a lot of people who can step into those jobs.
That's exactly right. My conclusion would be, and again, the without scenario, the state's economy would initially contract until in-migration or natural labor force growth offsets the consequences of this policy decision. We don't have a ready supply of unemployed people waiting to take these jobs. That's just not the case here in Iowa. And as a matter of fact, if you've been paying attention to Iowa's workforce statistics, in the last several months, our labor force has been consistently contracting. And so this would just simply make our labor force situation worse.
Okay, Dave Swenson, Iowa State University Associate Scientist in the Department of Economics. On various issues, we'd like to look to him to get the economic picture. Dave, thanks for stepping into our studio.
You're welcome.
DACA is our topic, the future of immigration policy in our country, in our state, deferred action for childhood arrivals, dreamers. These are all the buzzwords we've been hearing in our news. Lori Chesser is with us, immigration attorney at Davis Brown Law Firm in Des Moines. I can see we have a number of callers coming up here, Lori, but here's one important thing perhaps you can tell us about. Where do DACA recipients turn to, and the recipients and their families turn to for resources to find out what their individual situation is? And I understand each of these situations is individual, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is, and so you can't just get your legal advice from the internet or something like that. So there are certainly some nonprofits out there, Justice for Our Neighbors, American Friends Service Committee, but there's also a lot of qualified immigration attorneys that are ready and willing to help. I would just caution against notarios, which is kind of how the community it refers to people that are not lawyers but are in some cases trying to help the community, in some cases aren't really helping too much, with that kind of advice. And certainly there's some online resources nationally. American Immigration Lawyers is one that has lawyer referral services. So I just, just say reach out and get some good legal advice.
Okay, Lori, let's hear some other individual stories. Kenya is with us. Kenya is a DACA recipient originally from El Salvador. Kenya, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Great to have you with us on this program. You are protected, or you applied for and received the protection of DACA. We'll see how long those protections last. You left El Salvador. How old were you, and what made you come to the U.S., to Iowa from El Salvador?
When I was 11 years old. I am about to turn 24, so half of my life I've lived in El Salvador. Now I've lived the majority of it here in Iowa. in Des Moines, Iowa specifically. We came because El Salvador was just becoming very violent, and girls, I was 11, and preteens were already being kidnapped and made into sex slaves for gang members, and my parents foresaw all of the things that are going on right now, unfortunately, in El Salvador, and we needed to get out. We weren't safe, and my parents made the decision of bringing us to the United States because it was either that or we probably got murdered on the streets. Right now, El Salvador is the number one murder capital of the world, of a country that isn't at war. And just last September was the deadliest month for the country. Mm-hmm. And if I were still over there, if I was still in El Salvador, I don't know that I would be alive right now.
Mm-hmm. Did you come? Did you come, Kenya, with your entire family?
Yes, I did.
So you smuggled yourselves in?
Yep, we crossed the border to come to the United States.
Mm-hmm. Why Iowa specifically?
We already had some family members here, and they would tell us that it was a great state for opportunities, education, and mostly because Iowans were very nice and very welcoming, and we had no other choice, and we came here.
Mm-hmm. So what has been the experience in Iowa? Have you overall received a warm welcome?
Yes and no. I think before Trump was elected as president, it was definitely a different atmosphere. I had multiple mentors who helped me and my family through the times that we struggled a lot of mentors, teachers that were really invested in my education, and that's how I was able to complete my college education just this past May. But things changed when Trump started his run for presidency. There was a lot more hostility. I experienced more hostility. And
hostility? Mm-hmm.
Hostility, yes, thank you. And it wasn't the same. It was not it wasn't a welcoming city for my family and I anymore.
Kenya, stay there. I want to turn to Lori Chesser, our immigration attorney. Did you, with your contact with DACA recipients, other immigrants to the U.S., Lori, is that a turning point there, the campaign and the election of Donald Trump, in terms of how immigrants, DACA recipients, view themselves in our society and their legal status?
Yeah, unfortunately, yes, both because of the rhetoric that was used in the campaign and then some of the things that have been done after. I think people are very uncertain. But I also have friends and clients who have been here a lot of times for years and are U.S. citizens and are also experiencing these unfortunate situations of verbal and even physical abuse at sometimes. Now, that's not everyone, obviously, but it's just simply that it did seem to change the tone, which is really sad given the welcoming nature of our state typically.
Mm-hmm. Kenya, and when you applied to be a DACA recipient, what were your feelings then? Did you think life in the shadows was behind you?
Yeah, when it was announced back in June 2012, I cried and I called my cousin who was also going to be eligible for DACA. We cried because we longed to go to a university and get a college degree. And without DACA, that was going to be a little bit harder. And I knew that I was young. I was 19 years old. I didn't really see how dangerous it could be to turn in all of my information to immigration. I was just thinking of all the things and of all the opportunities that could open up for me.
Mm-hmm.
And DACA did open up a lot of doors.
Do you regret that decision to apply for DACA now?
I don't. Because I know that I haven't done anything wrong, and I'm not afraid because I'm not a criminal. I am not someone that's harming anybody in this nation. So I know that something better has to come along, something that's more inclusive, because we truly are making this country better, and I'm not afraid.
Okay, Kenya, a DACA recipient, from El Salvador, currently living in Iowa. Thank you for telling us your perspective, Kenya.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. Ben Kiefer with immigration attorney Lori Chesser to finish up this program. Lori, we have a couple callers to go to. Is there anything burning from your end that we haven't mentioned from your field of expertise that you want to get out there before we go to a caller?
Well, I did want to say that, you know, this list of preconditions that have come out from the president's office, you know, is something really not something that we do really have to take a look at. And of course, we don't have time today on the program, but just to say that some of these things are worth many days and months of debate on each point. And there's a list of about 20 pages that I've seen. There's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think it's really important for people to understand that we are looking at one particular situation that most people have been in agreement on for a long time, and it's just been a political situation that it hasn't been acted on before, to try to draw all these other policy ideas in here is really just not the right direction. So I think we really need to just focus on DACA and get that figured out and then move on to some of these other things.
In the last 4 or 5 minutes of our program, let's get to as many callers as we can. Vanessa is with us from Des Moines. Hi, Vanessa. Thanks for waiting. What's your view on our topic today?
Hi, yes, thank you. I just wanted to mention, kind of in reply to Senator Julian Garrett, who was saying that if we gave people amnesty, then that was going to be a factor for everybody coming here. And that's just simply not true, because immigration is a global issue. And there are tons of different reasons, such as extreme poverty and violence. Also, I just wanted to mention, I have been in the immigration process. I have had a student visa. I've had a work visa. I'm currently a permanent resident, and it has taken thousands of dollars that my family has had to pay in tuition without access to scholarship, because international students can't do it. And I stand in solidarity with DACA recipients, but also with their parents, who were the original people, the original dreamers, who wanted to give their kids a better life and keep them safe. And the current immigration principles that the White House came out with, they are hateful, they are not contributing to anything, and they're just going to cause gridlock. So I also wanted to emphasize, we should not leave other immigrants outside of the narrative. I think that DACA recipients, they are absolutely our priority, but we also have to remember people who are just undocumented, ineligible for DACA. We also have to remember refugees and students and everybody that is stuck in some part of the immigration system. We need comprehensive immigration reform. DACA was just an executive action, but we need something that is really going to work and not something with these hateful principles that the administration has come out with.
Vanessa,
and I commend all the DACA recipients for all their struggle and wish them the best.
Vanessa in Des Moines, thanks for your view on this. Before we go to hopefully one other caller, we haven't talked about this, Lori. What do employers of DACA recipients face now? These DACA recipients work with have a work permit that was part of the DACA agreement. So their work permit, disappears if Congress does nothing?
Right. They have their own expiration date, and when those expire, if they don't have something else to use to work, then, you know, the employment will need to be terminated. So employers definitely need to be thinking about that and think about what they're going to do with, you know, to replace valued workers. So, in some very rare cases, employers might be able to sponsor someone, but it would have to be a particular situation. But that's another, you know, something that they should check out and just make sure if there's a way someone can be sponsored. But otherwise, they have to, again, make emergency, you know, backup plans that this, if this isn't going to be fixed. And I would add, contact their congressional representatives to tell them, let's get this figured out.
Mm-hmm. We had a new poll out. Just 1 in 5 Americans want to deport young immigrants brought to the U.S. as children and now here illegally. This is an Associated Press NORC Center for Public Affairs research. Just under half, 49%, oppose. That's the wall. But so 1 in 5 Americans are willing to deport. 60% of Americans are not are in favor of allowing the young immigrants, the Dreamers, to stay in the U.S. Illegally. Legally. I'm getting a little bit tongue-tied here at the end of the program. Lori Chesser, perhaps we can end the program here. We've run out of time here by having you tell us again about how people and, you know, sometimes people, immigrants, of course, not always having a lot of extra cash laying around, not a big bank account number. Where do people turn to find out information about a family member, a loved one, a friend who may be affected by future immigration policy?
Well, certainly. And I would say, there are some nonprofits around the state, some that do serve most of the state, like Justice for Our Neighbors is a great one. Of course, they need support from other people to be able to continue to do their work. But I would also say that, don't overestimate what, a good, legitimate immigration attorney is going to be able to do a consultation for. We're not talking about thousands of dollars to do a consultation. We're talking about a reasonable fee for good work like that. And so only for the reason of, consumer protection, we want to get that out there. And, certainly lawyers do pro bono work as well. But it's just important to make sure that, you know what your situation is and what can be done, and also that you can plan
in case
it is a bad outcome.
Lori Chesser, we have to go. Thank you very much of Davis Brown Law Firm in Des Moines. We appreciate your expertise, Lori.
Sure. Thank you.
River to River is produced today by Robbie Broad with help from Ben Stanton, Emily Woodbury, and Lindsay Moon. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.